be seated. I know there's lots of visiting and lots to see, but take a seat and we'll start our meeting. We have such a good program today, we don't want to miss anything. We'll wait till everybody gets a chair. Isn't it nice and cool in here, and aren't you glad you're not outside in that 100-degree heat? If you'll bow your heads, Dorothy Cease will lead us in prayer.
Heavenly Father, today, as we are celebrating Pioneer Women, we ask you to encourage all women to use the strong ancestral pioneer ladies as models. They endured hardships that we cannot conceive and reared large families as a very normal way of life. Most history books enumerate the heroic efforts of the pioneer men, but we know that the pioneer women, their struggles, strengths, sufferings were a very important contribution to the forming of this Medina County and the nation. Let's all say the Our Father to give us the strength to carry on the example of these pioneer families. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. The kingdom, the power, and the glory. Amen.
Thank you, Dorothy. For those of you who do not know who I am Adrian Winan, and I'm president of the CCHA, and I want to welcome all of you here today. I'm so pleased to see all of you in this nice hot afternoon. I know that we have some guests and some new members, so if the guests would stand up and let us see who you are. I know there were a couple of guests who signed in. Nick Fong, and your name is?
Shirley.
Fong.
Sarah Fong.
Oh. Oh, I'm so glad to have you here. Any new members that we have for the first time? Do we have some first-time members? Oh, yes, we just met this.
Mr. and Mrs. Tom Dawson.
Dawson from Donna and they are going to be Castroville residents, right? One of these days. We're so glad to have you here. And Mrs. Kemp, Florence Kemp, glad to have you here. Glad you finally joined us. Anyone else? Oh, well, we'll get them all in here and have them get seated in just a moment. Well, again, we're pleased to have all of you here. In your newsletter, and I'm sure all of you got our new newsletter, you had a copy of the minutes, and I hope you read the minutes. And are there any corrections or additions to the minutes? All right. Any other corrections to them? Okay. Thank you, Vivian. If there are no other corrections or additions, I'd like to entertain a motion that we dispense with reading of the minutes today. All right. Is there a second? All right. Charlie Cease and Henry Martin. Seconded. Thank you. Joseph Cook is our treasurer. And Joseph, you ready? Joseph is doing double duty today because Elaine is off attending Sister Charles's 50th anniversary of in the sisterhood. So Joseph?
This report is for the period 1 March through the end of May. At the beginning of March, we had a balance in the bank of $4,039.06. We had income of $481.75, and it was from dues $142, book sales $286, and bank interest was $53. We had expenses of $482.30. Refunds for dues overpayment was 17. Safe deposit box rent was 10. Quarterly meeting expense was 203. Postage and paper supplies was 34. Printing of the yearbook, $218. And that included some miscellaneous other costs. Leaving a balance in a checking account as of the end of May, $4,038.51. We've got three other investment accounts. One is with Santonia Savings, which is now Gibraltar, $15,095. Community National Bank, $8,637. Hondo National Bank, $10,518. The investment account totals $34,251. When you add that to the checking account, we've got assets that total $38,290. So, are there any questions?
Good. Thank you, Joseph. Our corresponding secretary and her husband, Billy and Herbert Bilhart, could not be here today. Herbert, with his German band, is off in Brenham celebrating the 100th anniversary there of the Hermann Son. So he is entertaining in Brenham today. But Billy and Herbert did an excellent job on getting out the newsletter this year, this quarter, and we do appreciate that. And Billy also had brief correspondence. We had a note from Mrs. Hilmer Haglund in response to our sympathy note. And then also she has gotten out answering answers to letters of inquiry regarding genealogy or searching for the ancestors here in Medina County. On May 16th, we had our board meeting in Castroville. And at the board meeting, we decided a few things that I would like to share with you. In your newsletter, I know that you looked or hopefully read that we agreed to sponsor two scholarships, $100 each per semester, for two students to study German or French. The students should be from Medina County. They can be a child or grandchild of CCHA as well as in general in the community. And I hope that you looked at that, and I hope that you would encourage any of the young people to study the language. It's important to know another language, and especially since we are visiting, if you will, with the folks from Europe, and they come here, we go there, and language, if you can speak the language, you know what a help that is to you. And we would like to encourage the young people. And if anyone in your family is so doing, please have them send in their application. Also, at that meeting, we voted to establish the museum fund, our building fund, the account that is with now First Gibraltar. And we welcome any gifts, memorials to that fund. So keep that in mind. And that's, as Joseph just gave you, is a little over $15,000 at this point. But that money will keep separate from anything else and towards our museum. Hopefully, one of these days, we're going to get a building. We also voted to participate in the Medina County Fair. Later on, I'll be speaking to that. And we also agreed to sell Sister Generosa's book. So many of you expressed a desire to own one of those books when we were at the meeting at Lady of the Lake. So we have those available today, and all of the proceeds or all the monies will go to the Sisters of Divine Providence, not to CCHA. Let me see. I don't want to miss anything for you. Oh, and we are having a contest to name the newsletter. So put on your thinking caps. We need a name for that newsletter. And a prize for that, if you are so lucky, you will get a year's membership in CCHA. So be thinking. We need a name. Submit the names to our box number R to our public relations man, Jerome Winan. Now I would like the committee report, membership, Aline.
As of today, our membership is 263. We had one death this past month of Mr. Jack Vincemeyer. And our new members today are Florence Kemp and Rose Zare Kent. This is 263 as of today.
Great. That is a really great membership for our organization. We want to keep that up, so encourage all your family, friends, and any young folks that you can to join us. The meetings are fun, even if it is a hot day. Ways and Means, Dorothy C. You got a big report for us?
In books, we have one Indian fighter left. That's $35. Walt Casterville, $10 apiece. Sister Generosa's book, $10. Old Fashioned Receipts cookbook, $10. Luton's Casterville, the French book, is $17. And Bertha bought some posters that are $2 each. And at the Medina County Fair, I want volunteers to work two-hour shifts, and so if you would see me after the meeting or sometime before September, we want to make sure we have full rosters. At last year, we had wonderful cooperation.
What is the work there?
What is it? Okay. Well, and then Joe reported on our income.
Great. Don't forget these books make great gifts. And public relations, Jerome Winan.
I'd like to use both hands, and I'll use my own broadcast PA system here. We had dwindled down to a precious few of the old brochures. It was a double-sided, six-panel that is largely pictorial. It gave the basic facts about wide joint and a little bit about the history, and it served the purposes well. But at the February meeting of the board of directors, I had recommended that we be charged with putting out a new brochure which would show some of the updates of the organization in our 15-year history. And the board gave consent to do that. And we have, we dummied it out, we wrote some copy, a draft, and the layout, and brought it back to the board at the May 16th meeting and got the go-ahead to print 1,000 copies. So they've been available over here on Dorothy's table. If you don't have one, pick up one when you leave. And if you'd like to pick up 5 of them and take them, that'll be fine. Give them to your friends, and we can solicit new memberships. But this was done with a twofold purpose in mind. One was to help educate some of the long-time members, maybe not the charter members that are still active, but all of us can, I think, use a refresher on the history, the purposes, membership, the publications, the newsletter, yearbook, the meetings, the programs, the activities. And I'll call special attention to a little thing that we dropped in here. It is said that. And we've picked up some sayings by Julia Nuttwall, the author of the very classic book on Castro and Casterville. We have something in here of our dear departed friend Josie Rhody Finger. And then we sought permission from the Casterville Chamber of Commerce, and some in this room serve on that. We did seek permission to pick up some of the prose that I found in there about Miss Lawler, and some of it we can attribute to Dorothy Cease, and others of you had your say on it. But I think we have gotten, with the names of these three ladies in here, some of the history that we wanted to show. Now, we will coordinate this with Mona and Aline Cook at a later date, but I would feel at this time that renewal memberships not necessarily need to fill out this blank application. That is primarily aimed at the new members to CCHA, and the renewals, when Mona and Aline set that up for the fall, can just pay at the December meeting or something, and we will coordinate that with them. But even if that is snipped off, you still have six panels there with some pertinent information. So take as many as you need today. I think we brought about 250, and they cost the organization about 11 cents. It's just pretty hard these days and time to produce anything a little less than that. So pay for everything but your outhouse with them, and take them with you on the thing. Now, a couple of other reports, Adrian, I'd like to mention that we sent news stories about this meeting and to try to attract as many as we could to hear Mr. Fawn and generally fellowship with us to Hondo, Tuta Divine, the Castroville News, the Bandera Bulletin, and the San Antonio Express and the San Antonio Light and the Northside Recorder. We were fortunate this time to get most of those stories published, including the San Antonio Express and Edna McGaffney called Adrian. I have over here in the blue scrapbook of PR stories a little bit enlarged thing. But one thing, if you did see it, we want to say that Adrian didn't tell them and I didn't tell them that we are all descendants of Andre Castro. That is not true, but Edna picked that up, that we are here because we all descended from Mr. Castro. I need more clippings as they appear in the, particularly in the Divine papers. I don't really have access to that. Dorothy usually clips for me for Gene for Castroville. I need the news clippings so that we can keep building a file to show posterity what was going on. Also, tomorrow is deadline time to get into most of the weeklies, and I would look to maybe Lucy back there, Lucy Davis, to get something in the Herald if she can, and maybe Dorothy would have a little time to get something in the Bulletin. But I do need to ask you, your help, to get stories into the newspapers, because by the time I get home tonight and write them and there's no mail pickup, they won't get there till after the deadline. But in winding up about the brochure, Adrian, I do want to personally thank the editorial committee, which consisted of Lucy Davis, who did a fine job, and that must be her training on the Herald or from her father, to help me on that, and Herbert and Billy Billhart, who are in absentia today, we're going to thank, and we're going to thank Oliver and Sue Reinhart, who made suggestions to revise, and Frank and Bertha Bowen read copy, and Adrian read proof. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerome. Any old business? I still have under old business. Remember last time I asked if some of you would be happy to volunteer to help with research for these inquiries that we have a few of here. If you would just help with the research, you don't have to answer that. We'll do that. But sometimes we need some local help to find the ancestry of a lot of these folks. In fact, we have one here from Mulus, who is looking for R and Bendeley connections. We have one who's looking for Kiner and, let me see, somebody, Kellers. Anyway, we have just a lot of inquiries, and we could use your help locally. And besides that, it's a lot of fun to go through all the records. So please don't forget, I have my little list, little sheet up there with no names on it, but try to remember to do that. And then under new business, Dorothy mentioned that we would like volunteers to help working at the county fair. Last year we had a lot of ladies signed up and it was a lot of fun. We had some men too, but only three men showed up. But we had a lot of fun, and we worked 1 hour, 2 hours, whatever you can give, on Saturday and Sunday. And everybody that signed up showed up. We didn't have any problems. and we made lots of money. So I have my little list for that. So please do that for us. Now, the piece de resistance today. Bertha, if you would come forward and introduce our program.
Before I start, I need to say belated thanks to our hostess from the March meeting. Seems we ended that without getting everybody thanked. And then the names were put in the bulletin and they weren't all in there. And I would like for all the ladies who made cakes for the San Antonio meeting to raise their hands, those that are here. All of you, everybody who made something for the meeting. I have all the names here, but I thought instead of reading all of your names, I would just let everybody look and see who they are. And somebody brought a cake on a very lovely plate that is right over here. It was left. It's a depression glass plate. So if you've heard of anybody who didn't get her plate back, tell them we have it. Lee Bommel has kept it all this time and brought it to me to bring here, so we'd like to get that back to them. Anyway, we are sorry we didn't have all the names in, but it's quite a long list I've just discovered, so I'm not going to say all the names. The second thing is that this copy that Dorothy called, I don't know what we can call it, but anyway, it's Mary Don Finger brought it over, and it says it's a remembrance of the year 1846 and 1847. And it seems like it tells about what price corn was and so on and so on. But so I made copies. Some of you said at the December meeting you'd like to have a copy. There are 5 copies over there, about that many people wanted it. And Miss Messler, did she come yet? She's not here yet. She has translated it. So when she comes, we will have the true translation of the paper. You can look at it later. I really do thank all of you who brought memorabilia today. We have a fine display. And if you haven't looked, don't go home without looking after a while. We have all sorts of wonderful items, from baptismal dresses down to cords and to all sort of kitchen things. And I haven't even seen everyone myself yet. So let's look after we're visiting, after a while when we're visiting and drinking something and so on. And is Elise Billhart Townsend here today?
No.
And Mabel Billhart? I was just going to add this. Elise Townsend Billhart's member was president of the Association of Texas Pioneers this year in San Antonio, and as such, she presided over the big dance they had during the Saturday before Fiesta Week. And it was when I came through the line for all of us to the introduction line, she said, "Oh, I know you from CCHA." And so that's who it turned out to be. And I brought some brochures from their organization. She would be happy if any of you would like to, if you're a native Texan or have lived here 25 years, you are eligible to join it. And they, too, are trying to keep the heritage going. And they own that museum or run that museum next to the Witte Museum. You might have all been in there already. So it's another worthwhile organization. If you're interested, there's a brochure there on the table where Dorothy is sitting. Take it, please. All right. I think I've gotten through my announcements, and now for the good stuff. We have with us today Nick Fawn, and I know most of you heard Nick speak to us at a time when he told us about the Indian fighters of Texas. One year in Castroville, he spoke to us, and then out in DeHennis, he enlightened us and entertained us again with stories about Fort Lincoln. So today, his subject is the Texas Pioneers, Alsatian Pioneers, whatever he has chosen. I know he had a hard time finding information on this because the women have been left out of the history books, I think. So we'll hope after today we'll know a whole lot more, and all of us will be very happy for having heard it. So Nick, come on, we'd like to hear from you. Nick is a native of DeHennis and lives in Uvalde now, and you're a member of the historical?
Southwest Texas
Genealogical Society.
So he too is working in that county on things like we do here. So,
good feeling about this today, and I know that what we're going to talk about is going to touch some of you in a very poignant way, and I hope it does, because I'm only half the program today, believe it or not. And as we get into this show, I think you'll understand that a little better. In many ways here, I feel like I'm carrying coals to Newcastle here. I'm coming here to tell you about Pioneer Women of Medina County. Many of you here are direct descendants of these people. Probably your mothers were original settlers, or you're certainly your grandmothers. And for me to come here and tell you things that, you know, come from your background, it might enlighten you a little bit, but I feel like there's probably more I can learn from you, a lot of you, than what you have, what I can provide for you today. I'm serving here more in the role of a facilitator, I guess. I've put a lot of stuff together thanks to a lot of help from a lot of good people, some of them being present here, Bertha and Dr. Winan and Madam President Winan. Jim Menke has been a big assistance to me. Those of you that have been in this organization a while know Jim and his value to this association. So the general thrust of this, and I guess the hardest thing about a program like this is how to get into it. After we get into this, it'll go fairly easy. And I don't know that I need this microphone or not. I have a fairly strong speaking voice, but I think I'd better use it for the benefit of those of you in the back there. We'll just go ahead and do this. Getting into the subject here, I need my glasses because I've past that age where I could do without them. And our subject today, of course, is Pioneer Women, or Frontier Women of Medina County. And this subject has come about in a lot of different ways. Bertha and I have talked here several times about what would be an appropriate subject today, and we agreed that this is probably one area that has been overlooked for a while, and that and I certainly agree with her that we do need to look into this and develop this subject here, just simply for the fact that it's been so long overlooked. Histories, whether they're written or verbal or whatever, are normally recounts of the victors. The victors write the history of and about themselves, and in relation to what they've done. Whether the enemy was an entrenched society or a threatening army or a perilous environment. And so, but history most of the time is written about those things that are very dramatic, things that happen that have a very clear-cut right and wrong or enemy and friend. Indian battles make good history subjects, you know, because you've got a conflict there, it's easily defined. There are different things about ideas as they're addressed in the halls of Washington and Austin, where you have things here where you have, you know, very, very concrete, well-defined battle lines, so to speak. And so most of the people who have been written about in history are the people who have been directly involved in these conflicts, and very seldom has this involved women up until the last, say, 20 years. You know, we really haven't had that many women being very directly, you know, related in big events in our history, at least not those that have been written up. So when you look back for precedent on here, you can go back even to the Bible and trace things back in there and say that the Bible was written about people like this. It was written about great men who led a recalcitrant people through a wilderness for 40 years to a promised land, and it was written about leaders and warriors who encircled cities and blew trumpets and things came tumbling down, and a young lad that went out and faced a warrior giant and proved to everybody, or gave all the little men of the world confidence that victory can be won there in the face of overwhelming odds. And so all of this has been followed through, and this trend has gone along, and then we've come down into more modern times. The Greeks, Romans, Genghis Khan, Napoleon, George Washington, Sam Houston, Davy Crockett, the Texas Rangers, all of these people have been involved in history, and we've devoted a lot of time to this, and I don't want to belabor the point here, but it's time now that we look into our own history, into our own background here, and say, what about Medina County? What has happened here in the development of this County in the last 150 years that has been important, and who's actually brought it about? Who've been the people in the forefront, and what's been happening in the background that supported all of this and made it happen? I've taken notes here rather, well, I was going to do this in a narrative form, but my style is just to talk to you like this, and so I'll continue this way. Ted Fehrenbach wrote a book a few years ago for the Texas Centennial. He called it Lone Star. And he had a little article in there, and he said that any country where men are men is usually a place that is hardly a happy abode for women. And it was indeed a particularly destructive area for women. Eternally, the conservators of civilization. Conservators of civilization. I like that, because I think that's very fitting here. Or speaking of pioneer women, another thought that I'd like to offer to you today is that, in this sense, I would like to look at these women as also cultural keepers of the fire. Now, let me illuminate that a little bit. And there's a pun there, if anyone is interested. You know, when you talk about nomadic people that traveled from place to place, there was always a responsible person there who carried the coals down to the next fire so that the tribe as it was could move around and bring their fire with them, because this was their essential element to their civilization. And so, you know, in this sense, I feel like the women of our frontier were these people who kept the coals of their culture alive, brought them over here, rekindled them, while the men were out about their ambitious and dramatic efforts in developing the land from that standpoint. So the women of the community were really the conservators of the civilization, and they also, as we say, were the keepers of the fire. Now, from the perspective of what we're defining here by pioneer women, I think we should look at this genre here and say exactly what are we talking about so that we can consolidate our discussion here. I've defined these people as being women who moved into this area from outside. And these are of the first generation born here in Texas. So let's look at these two different categories, the people who came in here and then their first generation. The time span here would be from about 1842 or 3 up until about 1890 or the turn of the century, during which these women were alive and participating and doing the things that were consistent with our definition. Secondly, they participated directly in the settlement of the area by these Anglo-Europeans and Southern Americans. And so we broaden it a little bit now. We're saying it's not only the Alsatian colonists here, but it's also Southern Americans who've moved into this area during the same time. As a matter of fact, I found it interesting to note that at the same time Castro's colony was developing there and he was spreading out here, we had a cell of Southern Americans, the Harper family and the Kings, that were establishing themselves right here on the Hondo Creek at the same time. Perhaps that's not widely known, but so we had, you know, two cultures here developing side by side. We also had the influence of the people here in the Fort Lincoln community of the Hennis, which were a really cross-section of humanity here. A lot of them were associated with the military posts that drifted in. Colonists that were moving further west from the southern United States stopped there. Some of them settled. So we have a real hodgepodge of population here. It's a little broader. Just the German Alsatian base. Another thing is these people devoted a lifetime of endurance to facing the daily threats of various things. First of all, there was an entrenched, uncivilized enemy here. Starvation, famine, or the threats of these were certainly dealt with on a day-to-day basis. Melancholia and despair. How difficult it was to come here and to try to transplant into a, you know, totally different So there was a conflict there that had to be dealt with daily. Personal and family safety. It was almost as if you were in a combat zone where every day you just lived from day to day. You didn't really think too much about tomorrow. And some of you can identify with that. It's a mentality. It's something that's stressful. You deal with it all the time. You know, it's not only the threats from outside, the Indians and so forth, but it's disease and it's accidents and things like that that could take a life like that. And that's it. So, this was another stressful situation. Unaccustomed, primitive living conditions. Coming from a settled village in Odensen or wherever, on the banks of the Rhine, to a sod shanty, or to a dugout, or to a house that was made out of mesquite staves, stacked or put side by side with a sod roof on it, that the wind whistled through and the snakes and scorpions crawled through at will and so forth. All these things. And then isolation from family, not only those in Europe, but a lot of times people move to the edge of the frontier, to the edge of the community, to get up, as we say, at the end of the holler, so to speak, to move away from everyone around them to get back. And this, it might have been fitting for the man, of course, but I think this was especially difficult on the women. So this is what I feel like was the background here. And then if we wanted to define them more, you know, further, we would say that all these people contributed to the civilized development of this area in various ways. Number one, they passed on to succeeding generations their self-learned values, both social and religious, and their native tongues. They kept this alive in the community. They successfully adapted to the arduous demands of frontier life that this survival here required. If they didn't adapt, they didn't last. They either moved back to San Antonio or to Houston or Galveston or wherever, or they died. Some of them did. Some of them died in accidents. Some of them just couldn't cope. There were some suicides. People just couldn't cope with this situation here. And certainly more than one desertion of a wife or a father from a family. These people perpetuated their ethnic art forms by instructing their children in their folklore and their crafts. Things like needlepoint and sewing and quilting and all of these things that are generally practiced today as learned or acquired skills from mothers taught to daughters and so forth. Cooking of ethnic recipes that were brought along and kept alive. These are all contributions. Music, songs and dance. These are things we live with, we understand very closely because this is part of our heritage. It's been kept alive and we understand that. And foremost, I think, was the religious creeds and education that were brought and perpetuated into the family there by teaching the children at home. And here again, I think these women that were able to do this, I think, were indeed conservators of civilization here. They kept this alive while things were in a disorder of confusion here in trying to establish this new area here. While the men were out, you know, dealing with these hardships on a day-to-day basis and trying to tame this land, as it were, the women were about the sort of thing they did in the home. And when we look back for references as what's been written about these people, you know, when you go to the files and say, where are some stories, some biographies that were written directly by the people that were involved, you don't find them, you know. There was no J. Marvin Hunter working this area. There was no Florence Finley, so to speak. Mrs. Finley was a writer from Uvalde County that did quite extensive interviewing back there in the 1930s and 40s and was able to talk to a lot of the people themselves or their children. Mr. Hunter worked out of Bandera County, and about 1922 he did a pioneer history of Bandera County where he spoke with many of the pioneers themselves. They were in their 80s and 90s at that time, but he got some really direct stuff there from these people. And I think it's something here that we don't have, even though the Casper College Heritage Association's book, or the, you know, Pioneer History of Medina County, is certainly a worthwhile document. And it's really an outstanding effort to do this, to get all this put together. Still, we've lost something here of the first pioneers that we never were able to get. Interviews with women who could tell you exactly what they were doing in those formative years. One thing I found in my research here, and I've used it before, I think, but in about 1853 or 1854, there was a traveling writer for the New York Times that came through Texas. His name was Frederick Olmsted. And what he was doing a travel log here, writing for the people back in New York so that they might be interested in traveling to Texas, or at least understand something about what the life was like here. And one of his, at one time he put all this together and was published in book form and then reprinted again in the 1970s or 60s. But in this, he made a comment about what he found along his journey here, and I noticed this, that he said about the women of Dehennis in the colony there in 1854, and of course they'd been established there about, 47 to 54, it's about 70 years. Okay, the colony had been there, just established. And I'm going to quote here what he said. He said, "The women of the settlement, by the absolute necessity of outdoor work, had been rendered, it seemed to us, very coarse and masculine in character. All the ordinary labors of men, such as digging and herding cattle, were performed by them. We saw one of them lasso a wild-looking mustang on the prairie, and vaulting upon his back, canter away in search of her cows, without saddle or bridle. And the condition of the children must be, for many years, barbarous and deplorable." And I wonder, this was his outside opinion of this, but when you look into that home of that nameless lady that was out there riding her horses, what really was the condition in that home? Barbarous and deplorable? By whose standards? It might have been someone in New York to come out here and look at that and make such a comment as that, but the home life here was important too, I think. What were they learning and doing and finding there in that home? He did mention, I think, in here that he found some of the best food in all of his travels across Texas here in Medina County, in Castroville and Quihe and Vandenberg and Dehennis. He found fresh milk here from cows that couldn't find in East Texas, and he got so tired of East Texas cornbread that he didn't think he could look another muffin in the eye. But here he found bread out here. He was anxious about that. As I said a while ago, J. Marvin Hunter wrote in his Pioneer History of Bandera County something about Medina County women. He interviewed some local pioneer women there who had family roots or other associations here with Medina County. And there was one lady he talked to and that he wrote up. Her name was Annie Brown. And he didn't mention her husband's name, but he did mention this one lady, and I think her things in her life were important, and I want to get to them in a little bit later in the discussion here. But Mr. Hunter devoted one whole chapter of his book to extolling pioneer women in general, and did this quite eloquently, almost apologetically, like saying, gosh, we're sorry, we've spent 99% of our book here talking about the deeds of the men, that everything they did here, from fighting Indians to developing ranches and fighting outlaws and all that, but by the way, we appreciate you women too for the things that they did, kind of an afterthought, and this has kind of been the way it's always shown up here in the literature. So I think it's time this needs to be rectified a little bit, and I'd like to go along with something else here. When you look at other sources of information, you wonder, where can you find things that were written by women? Well, you have to imagine the women out on the frontier, and one of the things that most everyone did in that period of time was to write letters. Most of them were literate. Most of the frontier women here came with an education. They could read and write quite well from the schools in Europe.